Are you still looking for that one iodine that you can really trust? A medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science? Then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria, from totally neutralizing the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promotes stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutriMedical.com.
This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Welcome back. It is USA Prepares. Vince Finelli here. He has a show here on the Genesis Network and also rebroadcast over at RBN. He's been a master of doing preparedness, and some of these things might seem simple or not really important, but they are. For example, we're going to talk about some simple things today, like oil changing and why you do it, want to learn to do it yourself. He's going to talk about things like car batteries and what's the best, was a battery desulfurator, how do they work? Air cleaners, and are they all the same, etc.? Because, for example, having a proper HEPA filter, air filtration system is important. Having a proper decon facility in case of, say, a nuclear war where you're out of the blast zone, and making sure you have kind of the pattern of taking off your clothes outside before you bring in radioisotopes inside. Let's start off with the oil changes. You mentioned that on the break here just before we started that you recommend changing the oil when your engine's hot. What I do when I get my car actually serviced right now is I actually recommend an oil flush. But of course, when in the situation where you basically have to do it yourself, you want to do it while the engine's hot so you get all those little small particles, and about a third of the oil comes out after they would have ordinarily put the plug in because it stops tripping. When in actual fact, if the engine is hot, you're going to get all those toxins and particles instead of out of your engine, metal particles and conglomerated hydrocarbons, etc. You got to get it out, or it's going to damage your cylinders, right?
Yeah, and the main bearings, the rod bearings, the cam bearings, the lifters, all the moving parts of your engine.
Right.
And here's something that we should probably talk about. You know, what's the purpose of the oil? Well, one purpose of engine oil is to lubricate the moving parts so that there's not accelerated wear of metal part against metal part. So we know that oil lubricates moving parts. But there's another purpose, and that is to draw the heat away from the really hot metal items in the car. So, for example, the pistons get very hot because the top of the piston is in the combustion chamber. So that hot explosive gasoline and air mixture, or that explosive diesel oil and air mixture, gets extremely hot. And we know that because if we've ever touched the exhaust manifold, I mean, it's 1,500 degrees. So there's a really high temperatures inside the engine of the car, and the oil takes that heat and transfers it to the engine block. And then the cooling system cools down the engine block and transfers the heat through the antifreeze water solution to the radiator, and then the fan pulls cool air over the radiator to remove the heat from the radiator. So the oil is really important. Without oil, you're going to destroy your engine in a matter of moments. No question about it. So it's important to change the oil, and we all know that. So why do it yourself? That's really the question. Why do we want to change our oil ourselves? And let me explain it this way. We have, at our farm, we have a lift, the same kind of lift that Walmart has. It's made by a company called Rotary. And so we have a rotary lift. And so we drive our car into the garage. And then we put the lift arms under the vehicle, hit the button, and up in the air the car goes. So we can look underneath the car, which is kind of nice. Now, that's an advantage that not everybody has. We sacrificed and spent the $3,000 to buy one because we knew we'd be using it from now on. And we've had one since the 80s. The late 80s, we've had our first lift. So here's the plan. Why do you want to do it yourself? Well, let's say we want to figure out, are we going to save any money? Well, the answer is maybe. If you compare an oil change that you can get at Walmart, the cost is about $18.88. That's oil and filter and labor complete. Okay, so it's going to be pretty darn hard to compete with that. But are you getting the best oil? No. Are you getting the best filter? No. So you're getting an inexpensive oil and an inexpensive filter. That's one reason.
But you're leaving a lot of the garbage in your engine, they can destroy it.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's another reason why. If you go to a quick change oil change place, and there are plenty of them, and a lot of people are in a hurry, so they think the faster they get it done, you know, the better it is for the owner of the vehicle. Well, that's not the case. It's the opposite. And here's the proof. We had one of our instructors who came over, and I said, well, let's change your oil. He said, okay. So he came into to our farm, and he drove the car into the concrete pad, and I said, okay, let's put it on the lift. We put the vehicle on the lift, pulled the drain plug immediately. Now, this oil's hot, so we wear those disposable gloves. You know, typically they're blue. And we had the wrench and everything ready, drain the oil. And I said, now, when do you think the drain plug would be put in if you had this done at one of those quick lube places? He said, now. And I said, okay, let's put the plug. All right, let's put another container under there and let the rest of the oil drip in. Let's see how much comes out. Well, within about a half hour, another third of a cup came out.
Right.
That's significant amount of oil.
And yeah, and it's dirtier oil too, isn't it?
Right. It's more. There are more contaminants in that last amount of oil than in the first amount of oil that comes out of the drain plug. Now, when I change the oil, I let the car drip overnight. So if I get into let's say I go to Springfield, Missouri, which is about an hour or so from here, hour each way. So I ride around town, I run my errands, and I'm all prepared to do the oil change because I know that when I get back at the farm, that's when I'm going to do it. And I know that I'm not going to need the car for the rest of the day. And I know I'm not going to need it till tomorrow sometime. So I will let it drip overnight, and I'll get even more than that third of a cup. I might even get a half a cup. So that is one reason why you want to change your oil yourself.
Now, for the prepper, the reason why you want to do this is because all these services may not be available in a time of disaster. If something simple like a power goes out, or for example, right now we have the Aussie flu, that is the worst flu in 10 years. You can have a serious problem where something like a viral plague or a power outage or CME, coronal mass ejection, or a cyber attack on our power grid, and you have to change the oil or your car is going to significantly deteriorate, or to change the oil on, say, your generator. And if you have a gas generator, most of these generators are not designed, you have to almost change the oil every day in order for it to continue running if you've got one of these simple, you know, rolly kind of gas generators that runs on so many cans of oil, So most people aren't aware you can't run these generators full out for days unless you change the oil relatively frequently, right?
That's right. And there's another thing to think about. So let's say you decide you're going to change the oil yourself. Well, what I do is I say, well, you know, for example, one of my trucks is a 2004 model. It's a Chevy with a V6 engine. Nothing special. It's a plain Jane farm truck. But I know I'm going to keep it for a long time. So what I do is I go to the Internet, and I look up what is the oil filter that goes with that vehicle. I bought that used. So it had about 200,000 miles on it. So I bought it used, and I decided, well, I'm going to keep it for another 100,000 miles. If it rusts, that's okay. So I find what is the factory recommended oil filter. And then I research cross-references. I look for what other oil filters are available for that particular engine in Europe. And then I look at which ones, and then I go look at the sizes of them. You know, some of them are short, some of them are long. The longer the oil filter, generally, the more filter media in the oil filter. So I can get an oil filter that has twice as much filtering capacity, half the restriction of a small oil filter, and it's probably about the same price. So now I know which is the oil filter that I want to use. And it could be a Fram, or it could be an AC Delco, or it could be Lubrifiner, or some brand. It could be Bosch. But I find the brand and the model of the oil filter that has the largest canister that still fits, that meets the same specifications.
So the larger the canister, the more filter materials in it.
Yes, that's correct.
Interesting stuff. By the way,
we can talk more when we get back.
These things may seem mundane, but when you're in disaster time, they're not mundane, are they?
No, they're not.
Not at all. Back in a moment. This seems mundane, but it's not mundane. One of the things that I asked you on the break was, what do you say to people that say, hey, I know you're really well prepared. Maybe you're teaching them for years, but you just decide not to do too much.
Yeah.
What do you say when they say, hey, can I come over to your place when all hell breaks loose?
We have a family friend. Actually, it's a family, and they're all friends of ours, and we're very close with them. And they're dentists. And I was on the air in Springfield, Missouri, on a really large radio station there. And so people would listen to me in the afternoon. I was the afternoon guy in town.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day, this lady who is the patient gets in the dental chair of the wife of my good buddy, who's also a dentist. And the patient says, have you ever heard this guy, Finelli, on the air? And so the dentist said, yeah, yeah. And she said, well, what do you think? Do you think he's right? Do you think these things he says can come true? She says, yeah, yeah. So the patient says, well, if things get bad, I'm just going to go over to his house. Now, I don't know this woman, okay? I don't know the patient. I certainly know the dentist, and I know her husband.
that's pretty funny. I'm just going to go over to his place. You know, there was just a squatter. Showing up like the squatters that are showing up in places like Norway or France, whatever. They just show up and land in your property, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. So I thought about this. So our dentist friend called, and she said, you know, this lady was in the chair, and here's what she said. So I said, well, good. Thanks for letting me know.
Heads
so
up, right?
The next day, I went on the air. I thought I've got to nip this in the bud. And so I wasn't all that friendly about it. I said, you know, some of you have been listening for a long time, and some of you have heard the things that I've said about preparedness. And some of you may think that, well, you know, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to go over to Vinny's house.
You know, that's Vinny. They go to Vinny's. That's their preparedness. They'll plaque them above the fireplace. Go to Vinny's.
Yeah,
and they'll start flashing light, but as soon as the EMT, the sirens go, there's a blackout. Then you have a backup power thing and you're above your fireplace and it flashes, go to Vinny's.
Yeah. So I said, look, you know, I've been teaching you how to prepare. I've been warning you. I've been ringing the alarm. And if you don't do it, that's your choice. But don't expect me to have everything ready for you. I can't. So as a matter of fact, I can't even prepare for my outlaws. You know, I love them dearly.
I like you say that. Yeah, say the in-laws become the outlaws. Because they're not prepared, so they're the outlaws, right?
Well,
that's funny.
You know, that's the reason. My outlaws are one of the main reasons why I've had preparedness expos in the first place. Because I would say, you know, why don't you just, it's on sale. You know, 39 cents a can for vegetables. Why don't you just get a couple cases, you know, just in case. Worst thing, you just have to eat them, okay? It's not all that bad. It's not very much money. Why not? And so I just couldn't get them all on board. So I thought, all right, we'll have an expo. And they don't have to listen to me, but they can listen to other people whom they don't know of yet. They can come to the expo and they'll hear them say the same thing. And maybe because they're saying it, not me, maybe they'll believe the other people who are at the expo.
Another voice, yeah.
Yeah, and so none of the Outlaws has ever been to one of our expos. So
right.
That didn't work either. But what I said was, if you decide to come, bear in mind that I don't have enough blankets. I don't have 40 blankets for my extended family, my Outlaws. I don't have enough cans of food for them. I don't have enough pillows. I don't have enough pots and pans to cook for everybody. We don't have enough of whatever it is that we need for 40 people here for an extended term. We don't have it. So I've said to my Outlaws, I love you very much. And if you want to come here, that's fine. But bring everything you need, whatever that is.
Well, why don't you actually have a list for your Outlaws saying, these are the things you should start putting together in a trailer and having a vehicle that can haul that trailer to our property with, let's say, your Turtle Top shelter, so you have a place to put them, and your pillows and your blankets and your canned foods and so on. Give them a list. And that way, they load up the trailer, and if they want to go to your place because you've got other things to back up, at least they have, like, a Turtle Top shelter. They have the food, the canned food. They have a pillow. They have blankets. They can stay dry even in the cold weather. And you've got a perimeter control, and you've got other things, so they can be okay. What I tell people is go ahead.
Let me answer it this way. So I've said, hey, so I know a guy, he's got this expo, and you can go there for free. This guy will pay for your tickets. He'll even put you up, you know, at his house, feed you and everything. All you have to do is show up. That's it. Just show up. Okay? I can't get them to do that. So the bottom line is they're on their own. Now, if they show up, we'll do the best we can. But it's not going to be a democracy. It will be a dictatorship. It will be my way or the highway. Okay? It's not going to be like we're going to wait on our Outlaws hand and foot and, you know, cook for them and clean for them and wash their clothes. No, it's going to be divided labor. Okay? It will be a dictatorship. Everybody will participate.
It'll be like a pseudo military dictatorship because without order, you're not going to get things done. And you don't want spats and people going crazy because, hey, you're not ready for us, and, hey, we're all starving here, and we're cold, et cetera. I tell people, like, for example, and most people don't realize that there's basic rules of this. Number one, it takes a village. I don't like to use a term that Hillary Clinton used, but it takes a village, but that can be a mobile village. If people just build up a trailer of stuff that you give as basic list, like, if you're going to show up with A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. Mm-hmm. And then show up with us in a trailer, Paul, by your truck, and you're coming to our property. I tell people to get things like a Turtle Top shelter, get canned goods, dehydrated goods, get your warm clothes and other things and sleeping bags and so on, so that you can survive. The problem is that they don't think disaster will happen. Right now, and I have Lowell Ponte on, and I have to finish this now. Yeah. Lowell Ponte was talking the other day, because he wrote a book 41 years ago, The Great Cooling. We are in a modern ice age. We're starting an ice age, and this year is the first formal year of that ice age. We may be in the crux of a longer ice age cycle, which could last a long time. The fact is, an ice age, statistically analyzed by experts, it'll kill more people than a nuclear war. People aren't prepared for that. They're not prepared for something as simple as a coronal mass ejection. When the sun is quiet like it is now, it's more likely to shoot us with a CME. We also have a weaker magnetosphere. We have people willing to hack into our power grid because idiots like Obama pushed smart grid. And it's actually even more hackable. We have a power grid that could easily, you could have six teams of guys and shotguns just blow up the step-down transformers across the country. And much of the power grid would go, bye-bye, see you later. And it'll be years before you get it fully operational because the material, the step-down transformers, et cetera, are now made in China. We don't even make them here. That's a matter of national security. Why do we not make material to keep our power grid operational? Why do we not move our power grid away from areas which are dangerous, like in California, where it could start grass fires? Or tree fires or chaparral. Why do we, just like, for example, the mudstorms that happened, and I'll just give you a good example of this. If I was the governor, I would have said, put up special barriers so when it rains on the top of these hills, you don't get boulders and muds that kill 15 people. Duh, isn't that logical? But no, there's no preparation to clear the chaparral so the fires don't happen in the first place or move the power lines or build barriers so the rocks and mud don't kill people when the rain finally comes. People need to prepare. Bad days are coming, and it can get easy bad days or really deadly bad days. Talking about oil changes. Now, we also need to get into batteries. I wanted to actually bring on the show some of the solar companies. There's a couple of solar companies, one out of Texas that actually advertises here on Genesis Network that does solar to lithium-type batteries. The batteries that you got from China, you actually had to special order them. They're about 225 a battery, and I think you have a battery bank of about 40 batteries. And your solar panels and so on, but the whole system is charge controllers. The batteries cost about $10,000 with import duties and so on. The charge controllers and the other things probably cost about another $4,000 or $5,000.
When you put the whole thing together, when you put the solar cells, solar panels, the rack, I think ours came in at around $20,000. But it would be four times that much if I didn't build it ourselves.
At least four times. When I talked to some people here a couple of years ago, the price was kind of ridiculous, and they weren't using the right kind of batteries. Remember, you want batteries that last for a long time, either lithium batteries or these nickel hydrogen, which are the Edison. I had an interesting stat that the Edison made more money on these batteries to railways, factories, and the telegraph companies than he did from light bulb. So he made a heck of a lot of money from these Edison batteries he designed, which basically, if you change the battery fluid, they last forever. That's amazing, both,
yeah.
Isn't it?
That's correct. As they start to degrade in performance, you just pour out the electrolyte,
right?
Which is a base rather than acid, and it doesn't mean it's not dangerous. It is, and you pour that out, you flush it out with distilled water, and then you refill it, and you charge it, and you're back to almost brand new, maybe 99 point something percent as good as new. And so these batteries, cold weather, they're okay. Hot weather, they're okay. Deep discharge, they're okay.
Yeah, so if you deep discharge to a lot of batteries, they wreck them, don't they?
Right. That's right. So, it's kind of nice, except, I don't want people to think that a solar array with a charge controller and an inverter and a battery bank is the be-all, end-all. Because right now, it's overcast. It's been overcast for a few days. And it doesn't work. You know, when you have overcast days, one after the next, you don't have current in your off-grid system. So you've got to either charge the batteries with something or use a generator.
Yeah.
So typically, you charge the batteries with a generator. But then you're looking at, four, five, six, 10 times the cost of just buying electricity in the first place.
Exactly.
So for anyone who's thinking that, hey, I'm going to save a lot of money and I'm going to sell the electricity back to the grid and, I'm going to make money, forget it. I mean, I've heard that people do that, but I can't imagine. I just can't imagine how that's going to work.
And they don't pay you enough. One of the things that I'm working on is the idea of solar hydrogen. If you had an absorbed hydrogen tank, I think it's better than batteries. My niece actually developed a system. She's her PhD in plasma physics, actually, by 18. She's her PhD. She actually designed a system that stores energy as compressed air. And they have compressed air vehicles that they drive all over Europe, Italy, whatever. They're just a compressed air tank. I think hydrogen is the best fuel. If you have an adsorbed tank, so it doesn't have an explosion danger, you can actually just store it as hydrogen. Then you can use hydrogen to generate energy when you need it. So it can be basically as needed rather than just on a battery. And the thing about this system, it doesn't matter what weather is. You could have a wind to hydrogen and you can have solar to hydrogen kind of married to the system, so you can be constantly generating hydrogen and just storing it in the tank. And then you pull it off the tank and generate power as you need it.
I've got a picture right behind me. It's actually a photograph. It's about 18 by 24 inches. It's an original photograph of a really large hydrogen tank. And this hydrogen tank was called LZ-129. And this is the maiden voyage of this hydrogen tank when it flew from Germany to the Lakehurst, New Jersey Naval Air Station.
You're talking about the Hindenburg?
That's Hindenburg. What I'm talking about. That was the voyage just before it blew up on its next voyage to Lakehurst.
Yeah, but if you have an air, what's called an adsorb tank, so it's not in a liquid form, but it's adsorbed to a surface, and it's kind of a honeycomb, you don't have an explosion danger. But it's it's a different kind of tank. They can use it for natural gas as well. The thing is that we need to use novel ways of generating power because with our extreme weather that we're going to have, with extreme weather which knocks out power grids and distribution systems, you have to guarantee, and this is the same with factories. Factories are now starting to install fuel cell technology and so on and have large tanks of fuel so they can keep the factory going because they can't rely on the grid. And they can't shut the factory down, right?
Let me ask you this. Have you ever been knocked off the air because of a power failure?
All the time.
Okay.
Here's what I do, though. I have a backup power battery for my computers. I have a backup 20-kilowatt generator that kicks in 4 seconds, so I'm never off more than 4 seconds before I have power.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's a good way to do it. The point I'm trying to make is, if you didn't have that backup system, would you be off the air? And the answer is yes.
Absolutely. What I want to do is put a third layer, which is solar hydrogen, and maybe even a combination of solar hydrogen and some lithium batteries, but I think the best way is have parts of your house served by your solar panel, parts of your house served by, let's say, hydrogen, and parts of your house served by your other backup system if you have emergencies for a half an hour or something like say, a propane tanks, which if you use only half an hour a day, they can last you for years. You have two or three 500-gallon tanks. The problem I see is that people don't think far enough ahead, and you have to plan these things and set up your power controllers in your house so that there's automatic switching and so on, so you don't have to go mess around outside, especially if the weather's bad or you just don't want to electrocute yourself.
Let's key in on something that you mentioned. I believe you said you've got uninterruptible power in your studio for your computers and probably your routers.
Right, I have backup power.
Yeah.
It actually is connected to a battery block system, so even if the power goes out elsewhere, the battery power for the computers is continuous, but then the whole home has got a 20-kilowatt generator kicks in 4 seconds.
Right, and here's the point, though. Let's say you didn't have this uninterruptible power for your computer system and your router and your monitors.
Right.
You don't need it for lighting. You can, the monitors can light the studio with enough light so you can see on the keyboard and keep broadcasting.
I have the lights in my studio directly over my computer plugged into the same power source as the computer, so they'll continue anyway, even if the host takes 4 seconds to kick in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In my studio, I have uninterruptible power for, I've got 4 computers typically running, 4 monitors running, and plus the other equipment like the mixer and the access unit and the router and all that.
All that good.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the point is that if my solar system goes down, that's okay. I probably have enough time, enough energy in the battery bank to ride me through, and I could broadcast. Have to shut off some monitors, bring it down to minimum essential, but I could keep going. Now, in your case, same thing. But if you didn't have that equipment, that uninterruptible power, that 4 seconds that it takes for your standby generator to kick in is such, it's like an eternity.
Yeah, it knocks out your computer. Your computer, when it's knocked out, you got to restart, and that's going to take minutes.
Right, and your router is going to take minutes, too, and to get you back on the Internet. So you're looking at probably roughly 5 minutes of downtime, and that's going to be tough. Now, a lot of houses and a lot of broadcast studios have phones that are powered by AC. So they're powered by the wall outlet. That means that if your power goes down, if you lose power to your house, and if you didn't have uninterruptible power, you would not be able to call your engineer at GCN and say, hey, the power just went down. It's going to take me 5 minutes. I'm working on it as fast as I can. Maybe you can go to a commercial break or something while I reconnect.
Exactly.
You wouldn't be able to do that without powering your phone, unless you had a cell phone.
Yeah, and you need to think of novel solutions, like I mentioned a few weeks ago, that I can get the special clear PET hyperbaric chambers. You can attach a cylinder for 1,000 parts of carbon dioxide. At 1.3 atmospheres, it'll grow superfood if you mineralize it. The initial topic about oil changes. And this is kind of important because a lot of people don't realize they have to have a backup generator to be able to take care of their cars. A lot of people are not aware that some of these skill sets you need to pick up, because in times of trouble, these simple skill sets and the simple equipment you'll need, if you don't have it, you're not going to be able to go to the store locally and find it because it's gone. Right?
Yeah, so, and you know, we talked about something very interesting. You know, why did these oil filters that used to be a quart in size, why did they get so small? And I believe the reason is this. So somebody at General Motors or Ford or Chrysler said, all right, we got to drop the cost of the vehicles. Where can we save money? And somebody said, well, you know, I'll bet you we could, instead of putting 5 quarts of oil in it, let's put 4.5 in. Yeah, but it holds 5, and the dipstick says, you know, it's not full until it has 5 quarts. So somebody says, tell you what, let's just change the oil pan so that it only holds 4.5 quarts. Then it'll be full at 4.5 quarts instead of 5. And someone else says, why would we do that? Let's just make the oil filter smaller. And so it only holds 0.5 quart instead of 1 quart. And that's a lot cheaper because everything else can stay the same. And so I believe that's what they did. So now they're saving money on the oil filters because they're now smaller, half the material in them, and they hold half as much oil. Here's one more reason why you should change your own oil. So you go to one of these quick change places, and the guy drains the oil, but gets some of it out, but most of it out, but not all of it out, puts the drain plug back in, gets a new oil filter out of the package, spins it on, puts oil in the fill under the hood, puts 4.5 or 5 quarts in, whatever it holds, starts the engine. Well, that engine is running without oil for a few seconds. And why is that? Because there's no oil in the oil filter. So the oil pump has to pick up the oil from the oil sump or the oil pan, pump it through the oil pump, send it to the oil filter, which is empty, fill up the oil filter, and then once the oil filter is filled up, then send the oil on to the rest of the engine. So you're running without oil pressure for a few seconds. You're probably putting 10,000 miles of wear on that engine in those few seconds where it's running without squirting oil onto the cylinder walls.
Mm.
Yep, absolutely true. So how do you overcome that? Now, if you change your oil yourself, it's easy. So you're under the vehicle and you've got the oil filter. Let's say the oil filter, the threads are facing up. Well, that means that you can fill that oil filter almost absolutely full with oil before you screw it on. Think about that. Let's say the oil filter is horizontal. Well, you can fill it 40% full of oil and then screw it on. If the oil filter is upside down, and I've only seen one vehicle like that, and that's a Ferrari, and so most of us don't have a Ferrari, so we don't have to worry about that. That oil filter is upside down. That's a ridiculous design. But for most engines, the oil filter is going to be on the bottom, and it's going to screw in with the threads facing up. So you'll be able to fill that oil filter completely full. Now, of course, you've let it drain overnight. You've done it safely. Now you've got to be careful you don't burn yourself. And by the way, don't believe anything I say. Learn for yourself. I don't want to assume any risk, because I'm saying that the way I change my oil is when it's hot, because I want most of the contaminants out. Now, that means that there's a huge risk. So please don't sue me if you get burned because you're not paying attention.
Now, of course, you spend a lot of time in the oil today because in a time of trouble, if you can't service your generator or your vehicles, you're in big trouble because they'll seize up or they'll wear down and they won't work.
Right. And so you have to know how to do this yourself. So those are the big tips. And as I mentioned, I don't buy one oil filter. I don't buy two. I buy 12. And I can buy 12 for the price of three or four oil filters. And I have them on hand.
Good. I want to throw in a couple of other things that we're doing. We're reactivating our legacy food storage system, which are the best by comparison to all other food systems. They also have emergency medical equipment. And people need to pick up the BTLS, Basic Trauma Life Support, BCLS courses, which you can with your local sheriff or hospital. And they should have these things, and they should be ready to understand that in a time of disaster, neither the police nor EMTs are going to come to your house if there's a national disaster. You're it. You're on your own. I call it yo-yo, you know. So people need to understand that. Also growing food, you have to have layers. For example, we've had not only the legacy food, which you've stored for years, and other emergency food, but you can have a dehydrator, and if you drop tubes of the dehydrated food into liquid nitrogen, it'll sterilize it for 25 to 30 years from all pathogens. And then you make sure those sealed tubes are now basically have an oxygen-absorbing pack in there, so it gets down to less than, say, 0.11% oxygen, so it doesn't deteriorate. The key issue is that liquid nitrogen is the best sterilizer, not radiation. And people should have layers of food, so if you have a big meal, take the meat and other portions that you can sterilize and put it in tubes and then drop it in liquid nitrogen. It'll sterilize it for you once you dehydrate it. The other thing is you can get a mild hyperbaric chamber relatively inexpensively and add a cylinder on the side for 1,000 parts per million of carbon dioxide. And at 1.3 atmospheres, if you remineralize with NDME and our trace mineral combinations, which I can get to you. By the way, the link is not up yet for Legacy Food, so if you want Legacy Food, just email me and I'll give you the links on that because it's going up probably today or tomorrow. But what people need to start understanding is that the ice age that we're now heading into, even the mini ice age, the Maunder one, is likely to cause more death and more destruction, more displacement of population than a nuclear war. People aren't prepared for that. They're not prepared for extreme weather, like the storms that hit the United States last year. They're not prepared for much of the Midwest and the northern states and Canada covered with snow well into the parts of the summer so that the normal crops you'd grow there just don't occur. They're not prepared for massive population movement from the northern hemisphere toward the equators. They're not prepared for any of this stuff, are they?
Well, interesting you say that. I was on the phone with a family on the East Coast, and the weather got down to 15 degrees. And they called me, and they said that they had no water. And I said, well, what's the temperature? They said 15. And they said, but you know, the weather guy on TV said it wasn't going to get that cold. And I said, so you believed him, right? So then they had no water.
So I
explained to them, how they could use a hairdryer and use a hairdryer against the, where the pipe was coming into the house and use that and slowly warm up the pipes before the pipe split. Well, while I was telling this, I was on the Internet looking for heat tape, H-E-A-T, next word, tape, T-A-P-E. And what it is, it's a resistive heating type of a tape you can wrap around pipes. Cold water pipes, so that they don't freeze. Well, I looked it up on the Internet, and I went to Walmart to see if they had any, because there's a Walmart everywhere, and even near where they are, and I thought, I'll just tell them exactly what the part number is, see if
it's called heat tape, H-E-A-T-T-A-P-E, right?
Right, and it's like maybe 12 feet long, and you wrap it around the pipe in a spiral, so you'll have 3 or 4 feet wrapped.
It also plugs in, too, doesn't it?
Correct. You plug it into a receptacle. It may take about 100 watts, and it will slowly warm up a frozen pipe. Or if you have an area that your pipe would freeze anyway, you put it on there and you plug it in during those really cold temperature times to prevent the pipes from freezing. But here's what I found out. Walmart was out of stock nationwide. Now, what does that mean? So you wait till it's like the gal that says she's coming to my house. If things get bad, it's too late. It's too late to come to my house when things get bad. You've got to prepare beforehand.
Yeah, she should have your list and a trailer and ready to come to your house, right?
Yeah, well, that means they have to have a trailer hitch and wiring on the trailer ready to go. So now we're talking about, boy, this is going to be insurmountable. Are they going to be able to get that hitch attached to the car and test it and make sure the brakes work and the lights work? And are they going to have enough fuel to pull the trailer? Because you get, you know, fewer miles per gallon when you have a trailer and, you know, the extra wind drag. You know, so what I'm saying is, most people just, it's too much trouble. It's plain old too much trouble. That's why we're in this mess we're in. Because it's too much trouble. And as we say in Missouri, it'll be all right. And it's not all right.
Yeah. How about people are in a psychological mess, so when the mess happens, they're not going to get out of it easily unless they plan today. Plan today and slide through the
absolutely
mess tomorrow.
Right.
How's that? Including changing your oil, storing food. Absolutely amazing discussion today. If you need more info, we're going to be sending out more info on some of the preparedness issues to our email list. If you email me, Dr. Bill Deagle, send it to drbilldeaglemd@gmail.com, drbilldeagle@hotmail.com, and I'll keep it on our email list, send it out to you free, all the information that we're starting to build up and send out to help people prep. Again, do a little bit every day, and before you know it, you're prepared.
Need a powerful ally to fight daily bugs and serious pathogens? Allicin Med is the powerful universal pathogen killer's latest advance of German-sourced allicin, enzymatically stabilized to clear the body of bacteria, fungi, mycobacteria, and parasites. It penetrates body biofilms and is non-toxic to tissues. Pathogen resistance cannot develop for long-term body-optimized wellness. Clear stealth pathogens that promote autoimmune disease, cancer, and vascular inflammation and plaque and promote healing of tissues. Now pathogen-free. With 200 milligrams more power than prior Alamed, you can't get a more powerful ally to fight daily bugs and serious pathogens. Give your body what it needs. Allicin Med. Order Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutridyne at 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com. That's 1-888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com. And listen to the NutriMedical Report on the Genesis Radio Network with open lines every weekday. NutriMedical.com, bringing nutrition and medicine together.